Hi, this is Jay Trana, formerly of J&E Americans and now with J.C. Lunatopas. I would just like to wish all the fans and the friends of the Mike Miller Harmony Street Show, have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. And have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Golden days of yore, faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together. The fates allow, hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
This is Mike Miller, and you're with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest a longtime friend, the original Jay from Jay and the Americans, Mr. Jay Trainer. How you doing, Jay?
Great, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, we see each other every once in a while, you know, when I come to see you with Jay and the Tokens, but we go back a long, long way. Back to the 60s. Actually, at the time that I first met you, I was living in Manhasset Hills, New Hyde Park area, and I was going to Herrick's, had a group called the Islanders. And
Way back.
Yeah, this was, like right after the Americans, and we had a manager named Gino Moretti, and he calls me up one day, and he says, I have Jay coming over the house, and, Jay Trainer, and, he wants to meet the group, and We actually worked on a song that you had written, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. What I want to do is go back to the early John Jay Trainer years and ask you how you actually got started singing. You know, one day I know you wake up in this life and you say, "Oh my goodness, I can sing. When did that happen for you?
Well, this goes really way, way back when I didn't even know that, understand that. Like at the age of three, I used to go out to this campfire with his family and sing the song Buttons and Bows.
Wow.
And then later in life, something I just found, I put it on my computer, was a recording that my grandfather had me do of the song Heart of My Heart. And it's funny, I'm hearing myself say, hi, I'm John Traynor, this is Christmas 1953, I'm going to sing Heart of My Heart. And I started singing as a kid.
Wow.
So I started to know a little bit then, but not until I was in high school. And I heard a group, I was actually born in Brooklyn, but raised in upstate New York.
Right.
And it was a group called The Fidelities. They had a song called The Things I Love. And this group brought them down to our high school.
Right.
And when I heard them, then I really wanted to sing. I wanted to be in rock and roll.
The glow of sunset in the summer skies, the golden flicker of the fireflies, the gleam of love light in your lovely eyes. These are the things I love.
After that, I worked a summer job where I met some guys from New York City who were in doo-wop groups, on corner groups.
Right.
And then I really wanted to sing, you know. So I wanted to join them. So don't ask me how. I got my mother to move to Long Island.
Wait.
How do you get your parents to move so that you can sing? But
well, you were in Mineola then, if I remember correctly. When I first met you, you told me you were living in Mineola.
Right. That's where we moved to. And while in high school, I sang with a group in Queens.
Right.
The name of the group was the Abtones, A-B-T-O-N-E-S.
Right.
And it was named that because the leader of the group was Abby.
Right.
And we were singing the subways and such. And it was a friend of mine, Gene McMahon, who had introduced me to his group. So
uh-huh.
I started with that, and we had an audition with Mickey and Sylvia.
Right.
And it didn't... It was good, the audition and everything, but just things didn't work out, and we'd never recorded. So I wanted to keep going. And I met a guy in high school, I think his name was Steve, and he knew somebody who knew somebody at the Jim Gribble office in New York
right.
City. And next thing you know, I'm going to the Jim Gribble office
uh-huh.
with, 17,000 other, Frankie Avalon wannabes.
Yeah, well, Jim Gribble, for people that don't know, that are listening, is he managed an awful lot of groups, and he was hooked up with a lot of groups from Laurie, and we'll mention those in a minute, but tell me about Jim.
Well, I went to his office, and if you could sing, I think he sort of took you in,
Right.
He didn't do anything for you, really, but he just said, yeah, okay, come back,
Right.
So... there were a lot of us hanging around the office there. Paul Simon was like the office guitar player.
Right.
And Artie Kornfeld was in the office.
Right.
And a bunch of other guys. I can't think of their names right now, but
yep.
Ben Vincent was an office assistant and a guitar player.
Right.
He wrote the Ooh Child and a number uh-huh. of other hits.
Well, yeah, Artie lives near me, as a matter of fact. I had him over the studio a couple of times, and we talked about everything. He's a panic, Artie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to the Jim Gribble office, and
right.
I was going back and forth, and nothing was really happening. I got kind of disgusted with it. And then one
right.
day I was on Broadway walking down the street, and I said, well, I'll go back one last time. This is it. I'm not gonna keep this up.
Right.
I walked into the office, and there's Artie Kornfeld sitting
uh-huh.
on a bench.
Right.
And it was like a hush going on. I knew something was going on.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what's happening? He goes, oh, they're auditioning for a new lead singer for the Mystics.
So
Artie was the last one to go in. And I said, you think I can go in? He said, yeah, just sit here. And, after me going in. So he went in. He came out. I went in. And I knew all the songs. I sang well. And,
right.
The guys liked me. I had just moved to Bay Ridge, which was right next to the Bensonhurst, where they were from.
Right.
And but the luck thing is that the other lead singer, Phil,
Philly Krakalisi, right?
Krakalisi, his suit size was 40 regular, and that was my suit size.
Which is an amazing thing because, not only could you sing good, but you could fit into his clothes.
Exactly. That was a clincher, which is kind kind of funny. Yeah.
It's amazing. I know.
And but it's funny. Audie kind of lost out because he said, "Yeah, went after me."
Audie told me that in the interview, as a matter of fact. He told me that he did audition for the Mystics. But, you know, Audie didn't do too bad. He was one of the fathers of Woodstock, and he did some other good things, you know.
Oh, yeah, he's the producer of the Cow Sills, had many hits with them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Jan and Dean, too.
And then I worked with Audie, because I worked for his office, in the Woodstock office. I worked for Woodstock.
Right. Oh, that was great. And those Woodstock stories, I mean, you know, you start talking about Woodstock. I mean, we could do like 5 hours on Woodstock, you know.
Exactly. So that was my beginnings of the Jim Gribble office, and then I got with the Mystics, and that started things.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Mystics a little bit. You know, of course, that I sang with George Galfo's version of the Mystics when I first moved to Florida, and I came down and I left Harmony Street, and George and I had some a lot of good years together, you know, in which I sang a whole bunch of tunes with them and produced some tunes and wrote and recorded some of their CDs. But Georgie, of course, has told me the story about 6 or 7 times, you know, from start to finish about Jay Traynor and, you know, how that whole thing happened. But, of course, I want to hear it from you, because all of a sudden you find yourself as, you know, a member of the Mystics. That must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny. I was like a young kid in the group. I think I might have been 16 or 17 years old.
Right.
And so, you know, those guys kind of took me under their wing. Uh-huh. And, you know, I was nervous. The first show I think we did in New Jersey at a small movie theater.
Right.
And I was really nervous about the lyrics, the whole thing. First time having them, you know, memorize the song.
Oh, yeah.
I think I made one little mistake. It was upset me, but, you know, and Allie, he was...
Allie Contrera, right.
Allie Contrera was now with...
Right.
Emil
Stukio, right.
Right. He was, you know, he was like taking care of me. He was really good to me.
Very
and also,
cool.
Albie, who was Phil's brother, he was like the father.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But he was like taking care of me that way. So they were good. They took care of me, and we did a number of shows. The last thing I did with them was actually Alan Freed's last show, which was actually a tour.
Wow.
Did a tour of the Northeast. And that was the last thing Alan Freed did. I remember the last show, too. We did it in Philadelphia.
Unbelievable.
And we had a whole bunch of great acts on that. But I was just a young kid. I didn't even know what I was doing. And we had on the bus, we had Bobby Freeman. And we had Teddy Randazzo and King Curtis and his orchestra. And,
right.
And a girls group called the Bluebells.
Right.
Mystics.
Yeah, how about those Bluebells, too, huh?
So it was a... great experience, especially to be part of something that was part of Alan Freed, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, here are the Mystics. I mean, you know, that's big time for a young kid. I mean, you know, to look up and all of a sudden be looking out at all those faces, and especially with Alan Freed. I guess looking back at it now, you can realize how big it was.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, then, like I said, I was a young kid, and I was just amazed by everything. I wasn't thinking about anything. I wasn't even, at that age, I wasn't even thinking about the girls. I was thinking about...
No, I hear you.
I'm singing, you know.
What's my note? Let's go back to the Abtones. Now, you guys never had any recordings with the Abtones, or did you?
No, we never did. We were hoping to get that production deal with Mickey and Sylvia, but that fell through.
Oh, we'll have to go Google, you know, the guys and see if we can find the old Abtones and get them together for a reunion tour.
I don't think so. I'm not sure where any of them were. You know, I don't know.
I know how that is, you know. I know how that is. So, all right, you know, tell me more about the Mystics. Now, for people that don't know, one of the tunes that you did with them was Over the Rainbow, and all of a sudden everybody's watching The Sopranos, and here comes Over the Rainbow, and, you know, here's Tony Soprano looking off into the distance, and it's Jay Traynor singing Over the Rainbow, if I remember correctly.
That was a show, I think, in the 6th season called Mayhem.
Right.
And it was when Tony Soprano had been shot, and
he
was going to die. And all of a sudden, the end scene, he wakes up and he kisses his wife or hugs her.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you hear my voice and the Mystics coming up with the version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Wow. Did you have a heads up on that, or did you all of a sudden find out the way we all found out?
I got a phone call from somebody saying, I think I just heard you on the Sopranos.
Wow.
And so I heard it the next day. Someone had recorded it, and that was it, you know.
There's a rainbow in the sky. Oh, how I wish that I could fly somewhere over the rainbow, way up high. Behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops, that's where you'll find.
I think I know it.
So I don't know why they ended up picking ours. Maybe because, I don't know, I was young and my voice was very innocent. You know?
Right.
It was an innocent recording. Actually, it had never even come out on record.
Right, right. But, you know, what's funny, so I think I know that that record that has all those versions. So they put 40 of the actual 60 versions. You know?
I think you got it. It's probably right there.
Yeah, because Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells had a version of that, too.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
We were just lucky, you know. I'm glad that someone liked the version and got it out there. And, you know, the more I listen to it again, I like it because it is very innocent. You know, it's like kids on the corner singing, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, too, you know, having lived in Mineola, you know, and me in Manhasset area and whatever, and here I'm listening to Don K. Reed on the radio all those years, you know, and never realized that he lived very close to us. I won't say where, you know, because, you know, people will go there and sit in front of his house. But, you know, he was very close by there, too, all those years. What were the other sides that you did with the Mystics for people that aren't aware?
When I took over for lead singer, we did three recordings.
Right.
There was a song that was supposed to be like another Hushabye called Blue Star.
Right.
Blue Star, if you don't hear my cry, oh.
If you will tell me when, then I can live again. Oh, blue star, shine upon the one I love tonight.
Rainbow version, and then there's another one that got the recognition called White Cliffs of Dover.
Right.
Which I forget who has done it before us.
Well, White Cliffs got a lot of recognition.
Yeah, and it's been recorded by a number of people.
Right.
And that was an interesting recording session we did at RCA. It was actually for Laurie Records, but we did it at RCA Studios.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, it was like two-track stereo.
Right.
And they had one mic for the group and one mic for the lead singer.
Oh, yeah, and if the drummer dropped the stick, you had to start from scratch because, like nobody was overdubbing in those days. The producer would say, hit it, and you did it, and that was it. If it was a good take, it was a good take. If not, you did it all over.
Well, the funny thing is that the song is a double lead song. It's a bass lead.
Right.
But the middle is a falsetto lead.
Oh, I know, because I sang that falsetto part when I was singing with George.
Well, Ali did the bass lead.
Right.
And he was on one mic, about halfway across the room.
Right.
I was singing background with the rest of the guys. When it came time to do the falsetto, I had to run over to Ali's mic in falsetto.
Right, because that was the lead mic.
And then, when I finished the falsetto, I had to run back to the harmony.
did you have sneakers on?
Yeah, exactly. So that was a kind of a funny thing, you know. I always remember running from one mic to the other to do the falsetto lead and then back for harmony.
I can't imagine running, you know, like tiptoeing back and forth. You know, it probably got crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was interesting, I'll tell you that much. And funny, actually.
Oh, there'll be bluebirds over the white waves of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see.
Just you wait and see.
There'll be love and laughter, peace ever after.
Tomorrow,
when the world is free.
When the world is free.
The shepherds will tend their sheep, and the valleys will bloom again. And Johnny will go to sleep in his own little room again. Where there'll be bluebirds over the white waves of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see.
Just you wait and see.
Well, well, well,
Jeff will tend the sheep.
Well, well, well,
valleys will bloom again. Johnny will go to sleep
in his own little room again.
Well, there'll be bluebirds over the white waves of Dover tomorrow. Just wait and see. Well, there'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow. When the world is free.
When the world is free.
Well, well, well.
Shepherds will tend the sheep.
Well, well, well.
Vows will bloom again.
Well,
Johnny will go to sleep
in his own little room again. Where there'll be
bluebirds over Dover.
Just you wait and see.
Just you wait and see.
Oh, baby, just you wait. Just you wait and see. Oh, baby, just wait and see.
Well, that was the three things I did with the Mystics, and then I didn't do any recording after that, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know. Okay. Now. Let's get into a subject which I know has been talked about by so many people and explained so many different ways. Here you are with the Mystics,
right.
And then all of a sudden you're not with the Mystics. And, you know, how did that all occur?
Well, it was funny. I was a young, innocent kid at the time.
Right.
As far as I remember now, I'm pretty sure I'm correct on this, but I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
I went into Jim Gribble's office one day.
Right.
And I wanted to get an autographed picture of the Mystics
right.
for a friend of mine.
Right.
And Stan Vincent was in the office, and nobody else was there.
Right.
And I said, does Jim have any pictures of the Mystics around Stan,
right.
you know? Or,
uh-huh.
As well, he probably has some in his desk somewhere.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I really wanted to get one for a friend of mine. He says, get one, right? So
right.
I went in. I'm looking through his
right.
for a picture.
Right.
And Jim walks in, and he thinks I'm robbing his office.
Right.
I don't know what he thought.
I don't know. He's a big guy, too.
He was a very big guy, yeah. And he kicked me out, and that was the end of my career with the Mystics. You know?
Yeah, but you know what's really funny to me now? All right, let's take a step back. Paul Simon did some sides with the Mystics. I mean, was that before or after you came in?
I think Paul Simon did one thing with them and was the lead singer with them for like 6 months.
Right, right, right.
And that was right in between Phil and myself.
Oh, okay. So let's say that he was before you. And was there anybody that came in after you, had Phil rejoin the group by then?
No, I think there was. I think there was a couple of other guys that came
right.
in, but I'm not
yeah.
really sure who it was or what they did. But I know, and the Paul Simon thing. I think he came in as a lead singer, but I don't think he ever did anything with him. I don't think,
right, right,
recorded,
right.
No, he recorded one song, which
yeah,
I,
yeah,
right now.
Right.
But I don't think he did any shows or anything like that
well,
with him.
I once heard Paul Simon on TV, and they were interviewing him, and they asked him the question about the Mystics, and they said, oh, we hear that you sang with the Mystics for a while, and he said, the best thing that ever happened to me in my entire life was that the Mystics fired me, and I laughed.
Oh, yeah. I guess he had to then become Tom and Jerry and then go into...
Right.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Right,
you know?
And he did some big things. But, you know, so much great talent grew out of the Jimmy Gribble thing and the Laurie thing. I mean, you know, Jimmy Gallagher's my good friend, and we see each other all the time. And, you know, he was part of that Jim Gribble stable of people. And there was just, so much talent there, you know.
Yeah, so was the Passions.
Yeah.
And I think Emil Sturkio and the Classics were with him, I believe.
Right. Oh, yeah. So many groups. But I'm going to tell you something, you know, all these years later. Georgie Galfo told me one time, you know, we were discussing it, and, you know, he said to me, really and truly, we were all, you know, waiting for Phil to come back and rejoin the group anyway. So, you know, no matter who we had in front of us, even if it was Pavarotti, it would have been short-termed, and then Phil would have come back and rejoined us. So, you know, basically, you know, we know that the Mystics were mostly family. I mean, you know, they were brothers and uncles and,
yeah.
you know, so pretty much they were waiting for Phil to come back and rejoin the Mystics, which he did eventually anyway, you know. So
I think one time, much in the last few years, I spoke with Allie and he said,
right.
No, we probably should have kept you.
Oh, well, that was my feeling, too. And, you know, well, the funny thing is that the Mystics had such a sweet, sweet sound. And the real story is that they really wanted to do a more black R&B sound. And Laurie was looking for more of a white sound, closer to Vito Pacone and the Elegants,
right.
you know, from the Mystics. And they were frustrated because they really wanted to get into doing some real, real solid R&B, which they could do. You know.
Right, right. Yeah.
But
yeah, I know the guys at Laurie wanted to keep that Hushabye thing happening, you know?
Yeah, you know. I mean, yeah, what a grab, I mean, you know. And let's face it, you know, Hushabye, there's not one doo-wop compilation CD that you don't find Hushabye on that CD, and it's always in the top 20, you know, whenever they do a countdown. So I mean, it just happened to be a great tune. And, you know, as most people don't know, Teenager in Love was written for the Mystics. And when Dion heard it, he said, no, no, I want it. He was pretty much the head act at Laurie. And they gave it to Dion, and they actually owed the Mystics a tune. So Doc Pomus and Mort Shuman went home and wrote Hushabye over a weekend. And both of those tunes, you know, were number one tunes that year. So interesting stuff.
I know. I had heard that recently about the Teenage Dream Up. I didn't really know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. True story. They it was slated for the Mystics. Dion heard it, went wild, and said, it's mine. And, you know, when Dion had already had a couple of hits, you know, and after that they said, okay, here you go.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, I guess you and I know that. I mean, there's so much politics with that. A lot of young kids don't realize that signing a contract with a record company is the beginning of something. It's not the end of anything. You know, then you first got to go out there and make it happen.
Right, exactly.
You know.
It's funny, the connection with Jim Gribble,
right,
Mystics, actually led me to the Jay and the American Soul.
Well, yeah, well, that's what I wanted to get into also, because, you know, there's a lot of stories about that too. You know, how did that actually happen? How did you actually go from the Mystics to Jay and the Americans?
Well, actually, Jim Gribble had booked us on a show with, actually, this is a whole other story right now, with Clay Cole.
There's that name again.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very sad that
it is.
He passed away a few days ago. But he booked us on a Clay Cole show. And on that show was a group called, that was like opening for us, there's, I think, a number of acts, called the Harvelites.
Right.
With Kenny Vance,
right.
Sandy Aguda.
Sandy Aguda.
And a girl by the name of Sadell Sherman.
Right.
And they were a good group. They were on Top Rank. Nice sound. I think they kind of opened, or they were second or something like that, and then we did our show.
Right. Sandy, I know since I'm a kid, and, you know, we've discussed this too. But, yeah, I remember. And really, you know, with Sadell on lead, it was a real high lead. The group sounded like totally different than what you heard later on.
Right. She was a very good, very good singer.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of people have a misconception that we were originally the Harvelites. We weren't the Harvelites.
Right.
The Harvelites was that group, the three of them, and then that ended.
Right.
And I had at the Clay Cole show, somehow I met Kenny and Sandy, and I had to exchange phone numbers with
Kenny Rosenberg.
Right. And Rosenberg, Sandy Aguda, as compared to the names now.
Right. Well, you know, Sandy told me that the reason they all had to change their names was they were getting phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning from people saying, you know, waking up their parents and saying, you know, hi, is this Sandy Aguda? So she said, I had to change my name. I changed it to Sandy Dean and of course, you know, Kenny Vance and Howie Kane, Kirschenbaum, you know.
This is my own version, but this has no substance whatsoever.
Go ahead.
I always thought they changed their names because they were doing a lot of shows down south
right.
with James Brown.
Oh, actually. Okay, right.
A lot of shows down in the south.
Yeah.
And I figured they changed their names just to not be in the south and be Jewish.
Yeah, well, you know, that's interesting, too. But
I don't know that for a fact. I mean, I just, that's just what I thought. That was just my own mind.
When I did the interview with them, he said that's basically, and believe me, we kidded around a lot, you know, and kicked that whole thing around, you know. But he said, yeah, one of the reasons was, he says, we were getting phone calls in the middle of the night. My father used to come in. He wanted to strangle me. It was 2:30 in the morning. Some girl would call because they looked us up in the white pages. And, you know, because they knew my name, you know, Aguda was an easy name to find in the white pages, you know. And we get all these phone calls from all these girls in the middle of the night. Is Sandy there? No, he's sleeping. He just finished his homework and he's sleeping.
I'll leave us alone.
You know?
Yeah, it's funny.
It's really funny.
Anyway, we had met that night, and then I guess they heard that I had left the Mystics.
Right.
They were with Jim Gribble also.
Right.
I don't know what happened between them and Sadell, why they broke that up, or maybe they wanted to have a boys group. I don't know.
Right.
But I got a phone call. I'm not sure who called me for it. I think it was Sandy, but I got together with Sandy and Kenny.
Right.
In Kenny's basement, and we started, practicing a little bit on some, you know, street corner songs or whatever.
Right.
There was a producer friend of, I'm not sure if it was Sandy or Kenny, but
yeah.
His name was Terry Phillips.
Right.
He was a record producer for a Golden Records, which was a Childs recording company.
Right.
Childs Records that they would do.
Uh-huh.
And Terry wanted to get into a more legitimate business, and he was trying to do some stuff with Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller.
Right.
And so we got together with Terry, and there was three of us.
Because, mind you, I got this story from Howie and Sandy and Kenny and you know, so this is going to be interesting to hear how this goes. Go ahead.
The three of us were a group, you know, three
right.
of us were a group. And then I'm not sure if it was, we needed somebody with good looks or
right.
what, but they brought Howie in.
Yeah, well, you know, he told me, he said, Howie, all Howie had to do was walk in the room, you know, and he says Howie was the handsome one and wore all the clothes and whatever, right. whatever.
Howie knew where to get the clothes for us and right. you know, the, buy the mohair sweaters, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I'm not sure if he was brought into the group on singing talent, but he was good. It worked out great.
Right.
Was, and we were there. We were singing, and Terry Phillips got us an audition with Libra Stola.
Right.
It was an audition with them. They wanted us to do a demo.
Right.
So we went into, I believe it was Associated Recording right next to the Metropole.
Uh-huh.
I always remember.
I know exactly where it was.
Studio had the slowest elevator in the world. You could go to the top of the Empire State Building.
I recorded it once, I remember.
You're going one floor on that elevator, took you for days. Anyway, we recorded the Wisdom of a Fool, which was then later on presented to them by Terry Phillips.
I see.
And then Terry told us, you know, ended up telling us that, okay, they want you, you know.
Oh, great, okay.
If you're lucky enough to have someone to love you, then be glad that you have someone to love you. You'll be happy, believe me, if you only listen to the wisdom of a fool.
Wisdom of a fool.
Take her for heart, then you do something to it. Then you say to yourself, why did I do it? You'll be happy, believe me, if you only listen to the wisdom of a fool. For I had a love just the same as you. You'll be happy if you only listen to the wisdom of a
Then we went up to the office and I guess met with them and started uh-huh. rehearsing some things.
Uh-huh.
And then another day we were rehearsing at Kenny's.
Okay.
Terry came in with a contract.
Right.
And the contract read The Americans.
Okay.
So we had become The Americans, and that was the name of the group.
I see.
Then we recorded with them. We did Tonight from West Side Story.
Right.
Tonight won't be just any night. Tonight there will be no morning star. Tonight, I'll see my love tonight. And four of stars will stop where they are. So slowly, and still the sky is light. Oh moon,
tonight,
grow bright,
tonight,
and make
tonight,
this endless day,
tonight,
endless night. Oh,
tonight.
hours go so slowly, and still the sky is light. Oh moon, grow bright and make this endless day, endless night.
Called The Other Girls.
Right.
Frankie Avalon Venus type song.
There's a girl who I adore, one I'll love forevermore. She's perfection all wrapped up in little curls. She's so quiet and sincere. She's a pleasure to be near. No, she's not
hot
like the other girls.
The other girls, the other.
When I take her to a dance, no one else can stand a chance. She won't leave me even for a couple of words.
Like
the other girl,
the other girl.
Her first time in my arms, my heart began to soar. No kiss,
no kiss.
I felt so fabulous before. If I owned the sea and earth, I would show her what she's worth. Shower her with diamonds and with pearls. Yet she doesn't want a thing but a simple ring. No, she's not
like
the other girls.
The others.
The other girls.
Tonight did fairly well in New York, Connecticut, you know, the New York area.
Oh, I had a copy of it.
Sold about, I'm thinking about 40,000, 50,000 records.
Right.
It got on the chart somewhat, you know, but it wasn't a gigantic hit.
Because I heard a story, Sandy was telling me a story about something that they didn't like, something and whatever, and Kenny's mother told him, you go back up and you tell those guys that you want another audition or some nonsense.
In between that whole thing, they wanted us to record with them, right?
Right.
And they said, okay, we're going to do this. And then I think somewhere along the way, they changed their mind. And I think, I'm not sure who told us, Terry, or I'm not sure, that they weren't going to record it.
Uh-huh.
I think that had to do with that. All the groups that they worked with, you know, were R&B acts.
Right.
And the Drifters, Coasters, all that kind of thing. All
gotcha.
The black acts.
Right.
And I think maybe they had second thoughts about this kind of white pop group, you know. Group.
Right.
We weren't even doo-wop act, really. We were a pop group.
You know what I love? What I love about the whole thing is that, you know, here we are all these years later. You know, the story starts out, you go there on that day, but you see, all those years later, the story has been told so many times, this has grown in so many different directions, that all of a sudden everybody has six heads, and all of a sudden it took 6 weeks, and, you know, I guess that's some entire religions started that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's why I was thinking.
It embellishes.
You know, the things written by men, you know.
Right.
But they weren't going to take us back.
Right.
And then Kenny's mother told him, you can't do it. They can't renege on that country. You
right.
That they have to.
That's the story, yeah.
Their word. And Kenny went back the next day, and he talked to them.
Uh-huh.
And then, boom, all of a sudden, we were
yeah.
It was line, and that's when we did the, you know, start working recordings with Tonight from West Side Story.
Right.
And like I said, that became a medium sized hit, and they want us to go back in and, you know, record again.
Well, Wisdom of a Fool is a great tune to walk in with, you know, and just go, hey, you know, here it is. Bam, you know. So, you know, that I think that was a really good idea.
It came out real well. You
yeah.
know, I mean, if you listen to the demo, it sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, so we were there recording with them, and then we had to go back and do another record because they wanted to get another single out.
Right.
We were on United Artists Records.
Right.
And we started working on a song called Dawning, which actually was Edouard Grieg's Pig and Sweet. It was a song called Morning.
Right.
And they have, you always see like a scene of birds and the sun coming up and all that kind of thing.
Right, I remember that.
Well,
you heard it as sometimes like a background overlay for cartoons.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It had something to do with the morning.
Right.
And they got this Tony Powers and Mark Barkin, I believe it was.
Uh huh.
To rewrite the lyrics for the song, and then they kind of sped it up and, you know, down.
Yeah. I love that song. I mean, that was a great song.
I woke up this morning, the sun shining brightly, and loving each leaf on each tree, remembering the way that your lips touched mine lightly. Yes, your love is dawning on me. Whoa, wow, wow, wow. Yes, your love is dawning on me. The flowers are blooming, the robin is singing, and my heart is in harmony. Sweet things you said have all gone to my head. Oh yes, your love is dawning on me. Whoa, wow, wow, wow. Yes, your love is dawning on me. And blue skies and laughter, the world is a great place to be. What used to be sadness has turned into gladness. Yes, your love is dawning on me. Whoa, wow, 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 wow. Yes, your love is dawning on me.
It's probably not one of my favorites, but it's a good song.
But it was a good for that time, because I bought the record.
it was different. I mean, Libra Soul was different. You know, just the thing they did with strings and all kinds of cellos and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And at the same time, we needed a B side, and they had just signed up a song to their trio music, which was written by Ted Darrell and Greg Richards.
Right.
And the song was, and actually they made it, a recording of it themselves, and they were kind of like, they wanted to be like an Everly Brothers, but they were from White Plains.
Oh, okay.
And so I guess they didn't get it sold, whatever.
Well, White Plains is not far south enough, you know.
So they sold it to Trio Music, and Jerry Lieber and Mike Solo picked that song for the B-side.
Uh-huh.
So we went in and... we did Dawning, and you know, we had the chimes and the bells and the girls and everything singing, and then we did She Cried. And before we did She Cried, Gary Chester, the drummer, decided to pick up this hairy drum,
right,
and play the hairy drum instead of, you know, like a drum set,
right.
And then it's also a very, very intriguing tremolo sound on the guitar, which those two things, to my feeling, made the record.
And when I told her I didn't love her anymore, she cried. And when I told her kisses were not like before, she cried. I thought that our romance was over and done.
Came out and made a little bit of a splash again in New York.
Right.
Not much.
Right.
The story I was told is that a DJ in San Francisco flipped the record.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, they say he locked himself in the room and played the record for a number of hours.
Okay, I'll go with that.
I don't know who he is. I don't know if that is true, but it did become a big hit in San Francisco, which led it to becoming a number one hit in L.A.
Right.
Then it went right across the country. It was number one in every city in the United States.
Wow.
The only reason it didn't hit the charts as number one in the country is because by the time it was number one in New York City on WABC, it had started to fall off the charts in L.A.
I see.
So that's the reason it became like number five in Billboard, number four.
I'll take it. I mean, what the heck, you know.
I'll take it, you know, and I know it was number one in every city, so to me it was a number one record. Anyway, She Cried became a very big hit, and Liebman-Stolla, well, at the time, when we first recorded, actually, I didn't even get into this,
right?
But from the first recording, Liebman-Stolla felt I was very predominant on the record. It wasn't really like a doo-wop group. It was really like a lead singer and
band. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was a great solo tune.
And we had signed as, you know, the Americans.
Right.
They wanted a lead singer and the Americans.
Right.
So they decided, because they, you know, they're comical and they did the coasters and stuff like that,
right?
That they wanted, the name was going to be Binky Jones and the Americans.
Yeah. I did hear about that.
So
that's tough.
I turned around and said, I don't want to be Binky the rest of my life.
Right, because you know, once you get a Binky on the back of your jacket, that doesn't come off.
Exactly. I would be Binky the rest of my life. So I said, you know, use my name Jay.
Right.
You know, my nickname Jay.
Right.
It was my nickname, but it was in my name all my life. Nobody ever called me John or anything like that.
Gotcha.
And so that's why I became Jay and the Americans. You know?
Uh-huh.
So then She Cried became a big hit. for Jane the Americans.
Right.
And we ran back in the studio to do an album. The album came out, was called She Cries.
Right.
We did, I think, 12 songs, and we did them in 2 3-hour sessions.
Wow.
And a lot of the songs were, they took the arrangements that they did for the Drifters on Stand By Me, Save the Last Dance for Me.
Right.
You can dance every dance with a guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. You can smile every smile for the man who held your hand in the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, save the last dance for me. Oh, I know that the music is fine, like sparkling wine. Go and have your fun.
Oh, I know.
Laugh and sing. But while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, save the last dance for me. Don't you know I love you so? Can't you feel it when we touch? I will never, never let you go. I love you oh so much. You can dance, go and carry it on till the night is gone and it's time to go. If he asks, if you're all alone, can he take you home? You must tell him no. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, save the last dance for me. 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 Save the last dance for me.
Spanish Harlem for Benny King.
Right.
And we just redid these songs all over again.
Gotcha.
Song called Yes, which the Drifters, they wanted them to do. And actually that song came out later on a single and got banned in Boston because of lyrics that said, yes, she said yes, and smiled up at me.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes, she said yes, and why? A surprise, yes.
Yes,
she said yes, and then closed her eyes, yes.
Yes,
she said yes, and opened her arms.
Yes,
she opened her arms and said yes. Yes,
yes,
she said yes, and held me so tight. Yes, with all of her mind, yes.
Yes,
she said yes and smiled up at me.
Yes,
she smiled up at me and said yes. Yes, you can hug me, and yes, you can squeeze me, and yes, you can have. Thrill, yes.
Yes,
she said yes, and time just stood still. Yes,
yes,
she said yes, and opened her arms.
Yes,
she opened her arms. Yes, she opened her arms and said yes.
Oh, yeah, I hear you, yeah.
Could have been shorter than the guy, right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, in those days, you know, all those tunes, you know, were looked at sideways. I mean, you could, you know, look at Wake Up Little Susie. I mean, she got home at 3 a.m. A lot of them didn't want to play the record.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah, so it was the same kind of thing. But we ended up doing a whole bunch of tunes at Bell Sound Studios. That's where we recorded with
right.
Lou Mistola.
Right.
I was up one block up from the Ed Sullivan Theater, which is now the David Letterman Theater.
Right, been there.
Or CBS Theater, whatever it is.
Right.
And the album came out, it was called She Cried, and we knocked it out. I remember in one day, it was 2-3 hour sessions.
Wow.
We just went in and bammed every song out.
That's
came out pretty good.
A lot of singing. Yep.
Good album, you know, a lot of strings, a lot of et cetera. So.
Yeah.
That was that up till then, you know, and then we had some more songs. We had another song that came out with a little bit more like a group called This Is It.
Ah, she doesn't love me anymore. Ah, she doesn't want my kisses. I know. Without her, every day is black as night.
Bring up the moon.
I need the moonlight brighter than it's ever shone. She is gone, and I am so alone.
You know, what's so funny, too, is, you know, nobody knows really what makes a song a hit. If everybody really knew and could, like, bottle it and just shake it out when they needed it, it would be one thing. But how many times have you written something or sang something that you just knew was a hit and it didn't happen and all of a sudden something came along and it was so obscure and you said, are you kidding me? And then all of a sudden you put it out there and it goes bang, bang, bang. You just don't know.
That was kind of the way when She Cried. We never thought that was going to be a hit. You know, we just thought that was kind of a different weird kind of different song.
Big record, and they still love that song when you do it, man. You can hear a pin drop when you sing that song. So I mean,
I'm lucky that I can still sing it the way I did then, and keep it simple like it was then. And I get a lot of comments from people that really, you know, from their heart, that reminds them of being a teenager and the girlfriend they had or the guy they had. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, I see women in the audience crying. I had one a week ago in the audience, first row. She's like, had her head in her lap.
Yeah. Yeah, but not only that, it's a tough song to sing because it's all open. The entire song is open. It's all open, you know.
Yeah, it's very open with, then a modulation after the.
Right, right. I know. You got to be there. You got to be there. You know. Let's go back to my cousin Gary Katz in Brooklyn. I'm sure you ran into Gary a couple of times when you were hanging around with Sandy and Kenny and all those guys.
Gary was the Janie Americans R&B freak.
Right.
He would turn us on to all the R&B stuff going on.
Right.
You know, like I remember him coming back and saying, "You got to hear this song. You got to hear this song." And Gene Chandler with the Duke of Earl, which became a gigantic number one hit.
You know.
But he had a good ear for songs and music, and especially R&B stuff. You know.
Yeah, and Gary, as we know, produced Steely Dan all those years, you know, with Becker and Fagan. And, you know, another friend of mine who actually lives in Boca, who actually, he told me Gary brought me the group, initially, out in L.A., was Dennis Lambert, who I know you worked with.
Oh, yeah, Dennis. I've worked with Dennis in New York City. He was working under Don Costa, for Don Costa.
Right.
And later on in my career, I had been working at Warner Bros. Music Publishing. And
he
called me, and we decided to get together and see if, possibly it's a recording for ABC Paramount.
Right.
But we did some recordings, and they were good songs, really good songs. Actually, one is an underground hit in England.
Oh, wow, great.
And it still gets played today. There was a movement in England called Northern Soul, and it was all soul artists. And somehow this song, I don't know how they consider me soul, but they love this song. They still play it today. These people go to these Northern Soul clubs.
Well, that's what happened to me with the Lights Are Bright flip side that Ray Cerrone wrote. It was considered, Baby Pack On, it was considered a Northern Soul tune, and they tell me it's a collector's item. But which is the tune that you did with Dennis?
I did a number of tunes with him, but the one in England was a song called Up and Over.
Uh-huh, right.
That's in England, on Northern Soul, they think it's the greatest song in the world.
Wow.
It goes for about $600 a single.
Wow. That's great,
Here's the funny thing. I had a certain amount of demo copies still left, like 5 years ago. That song, right?
Right.
And somebody wrote me on the internet from England. And I said, oh, that's interesting. That's nice. And, and I ended up, like three or four guys that finally wrote me, and five of them.
Right.
I actually sent them copies of the records.
And now you don't have one.
No, I have one. But I mean, if I had known, that they would sell for so much money on eBay, it was like, God, I mean, I would have probably, done that myself. But trying to be nice to the guys, and I said, I got some extra copies.
I hear you. Well, you're a nice guy anyway, that's,
that's
not a problem.
Little girl, I'm crumbling to pieces, breaking up, and the pain never ceases. Yes, you've been gone long enough to forget you. I wish we never met. I wish I could forget. When I reach out to
gotta stop dreaming of you. Find a way to pretend I don't love you. Oh, tell the world I'm so glad it's all over. Do my tears have to show?
But, you know, talking about Dennis Lambert, you know, as luck would have it, you know, Dennis comes all the way around and he, you know, he writes like 48 hits, you know, including all the Tavares tunes, you know, Baby Come Back and Ain't No Woman Like the One I Got and Too Divided by Love and on and on and on and on. And then he goes and he writes a tune or two that were big in the Philippines, goes to the Philippines and does a show. Now, all of a sudden, he's got a documentary that his son did. And Steve Carell is going to play his life story coming up. And that's what Steve Carell is working on since he left the office. He's working on the life story of Dennis Lambert. So go figure.
Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, it's just incredibly amazing. And Dennis is walking on here. And that's what's happening. And supposedly the situation is growing and growing. And it should be a reality. It's amazing.
Wow. I know I saw a thing on YouTube of just a few years ago that Dennis did a night playing with a band in New York City. You know,
yeah, yeah. Well, what he's been doing is he's been doing like a showcase kind of thing where he's inviting some of the people that he recorded with. I know he did a thing out in California where he actually had Tavares and Grassroots and Natalie Cole and people, and he did this like extravaganza show of just his tune.
Yeah, I know he produced Glen Campbell also.
Oh yeah, he produced everybody. It's amazing. And you know what's funny is you know, he's a neighbor of mine. He's very sweet and unassuming. And if he walked into a room, you know, most people don't know who he is, and you would never believe that all those tunes that we love came out of Dennis.
I know. The one song that I downloaded about 2 years ago, which is my favorite, the song Night Shift.
Oh, yeah. He wrote that as well?
Amadoroso. I love that song.
He told me, as a matter of fact, when I interviewed him exactly how that came about, he said he was talking to, and I don't remember who it was. It was somebody that we would both appreciate, and the guy kept saying to him, oh, it's too bad about Marvin Gaye, man. Marvin, man, it's too bad Marvin died. Marvin was a friend of mine. Marvin, you know, Marvin was like, he was a friend of mine, man, and he died. And Dennis says he's driving home, and he's saying to himself, Marvin was a friend of mine. And all of a sudden he's going, Marvin, he was a friend of mine. And then all of a sudden, he said, by the time he got home, he had half the song.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's like really funny. But that's sometimes how it goes down, you know?
I think it's a great tune. I would love to do it on an oldie show just as a commemorative, like Jackie Wilson and Marvin Gaye.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Great song. Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah, I'm sure you could work that out. But, yeah. You know, hey, of course, you know, people that don't know, you're singing now with Jay Siegel and the Tokens with Billy Reid. And, of course, you know, we have a restaurant in Florida called 2J's, so that works. Whatever. And, you know, I mean, if people that haven't seen it, it's such a great act because, I mean, it's just Paulette and I have seen that particular show with you probably 6, 8, 10 times. Plus, we've worked together in shows, and it's just it's the type of thing where when the other groups, rather than being in the dressing room and getting dressed, they're all, you know, back behind the curtain watching you guys because, you know, the act is so good that it's phenomenal. There were so many hits there, and it's just a great act.
I think we're lucky that Jay can still sing like he used to, and luckily I can still sing that way.
Oh, it's great.
We have a good sound together. We always sound like a similar voice when we sing in unison together. And we've hit it off good, and it's, you know, it works real well.
And if nobody's ever seen Jay during a sound check, he's a maniac. If you're the band backing up Jay Siegel and the Tokens. Let me tell you, if you don't get it right, you're in trouble, because he's Jay is intense.
Yes, you know, the funny thing is, he cares more about my song, She Cried, than I do. He's in there going, oh, we got to get the tremolo right, we got to get this right, no, your harmony is wrong, and this is, you know, this is right. It's like, he's caring more, and I'm just going, let's rehearse and we'll get it together. Yeah.
And you guys have Carl with you, and Carl is just, you know, he's like a musical genius, you know.
He plays like four instruments. Very, very good. There's a lot of all the musicians we play with that, from the New York and Florida area, are all really awesome, you know.
So that's a wonderful thing. So let's get back. You're with the Americans, and you guys have a number one record on your hands. All of a sudden, somewhere in the mist is a guy named David Blatt. So, you know, how did we make that transition from you've got a number one record, and all of a sudden here's Jay Traynor, and he's doing other things rather than singing with the Americans?
Well, back at that time, She Cried was a big hit, and so we were, you know, making some money from, not from the record, by the way, but, you know, appearances and such, and then we put out the other two or three more singles, and they didn't make it, so there was no income coming in.
Right, I hear you.
Sandy and those guys, they had families who were, well, you know, fairly well off.
Right.
I guess they could get by, or they were still going to college and such. I needed to get a job. And
okay,
so
interesting.
First thing that was happening with me is I really needed to work. Then one time up in the office, something happened. It was almost something between Sandy and I, and actually Howie broke it up. It wasn't just the cuffs or anything like that.
Right.
But there was something, and I cursed back at him, and at me, and Howie jumped in. And I was, you know, even though I was born in Brooklyn, I was raised upstate New York. I'm very, you know, I was a country kid, you know.
Right.
But it was the first time I ever had, like, a little bit of a, not, you know, it wasn't a fight or anything, but something like that happening to
me. It makes you feel bad, I know.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm not used to, I wasn't used to that. I wasn't a kid in the streets who was knocking out the other kids every day.
Right, no, I hear you.
So, I guess that upset me. And then I hadn't talked to him for a while, and then they called me at my house in Mineola one time, and they said, well, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And it got me mad enough that I said, no, you know.
Nice.
And then I guess Sandy, I don't know what he said, maybe he said, are you going to stay with the group?
Right.
He got me mad enough, I said, no. And then that was it, and I left the group.
Wow.
And then there was a guy named David Blatt,
right,
a friend of Marty's, and I think he sang with Marty in a
right.
Another group, I can't think of the name right now.
Right.
I should be able to, but I can't.
Yeah, they told me that.
I think I remember that they did some shows, which kind of, you know, gets under your skin because you're not with them anymore.
Right.
But they hadn't done any recording, I know that. And until they did the song Only in America, which really should have been me.
Right.
But actually it was really the Drifters, you know.
Right.
The song that the Drifters recorded, and Atlantic Records pulled the Drifters off it.
Right.
Because the words... they didn't, you know, sing a black.
They didn't make sense for a black grouping. You know, Sandy was telling me, how could a black group get up there and say, only in America could a group grow up to be president, you know, and everybody's saying, yeah, come on. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And nowadays it's kind of funny when you think about it.
Right. But, you know, in those days, I mean, you know, everything you put on a record had so many political connotations. I mean, you know, if it was one little word out of kilter, you know, DJs would say, I'm not playing that. Yeah, so that political stuff, I mean, you know, it's just, look what happened to Johnny Maestro when he came out with My Husband, Your Wife. What are we going to do about your husband, and what are we going to do about my wife? They wouldn't play that record either.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it was political in those days. And they ended up pulling up the Only in America from the Drifters. And so Lieberman Stoller had the track sitting around.
Right.
And they decided to record that with the new Jane in America.
Right.
The funny thing is, Only in America, one day I was up in the office with Jerry Lieber,
right,
and they had recorded the two and put the voices over the track, and he called me in to play it for me, and he plays the song for me, and he said, what do you think? I said, well, it sounds good, you know, and of course I'm jealous now that it's not me, and he turns to me and he says, see, it's too bad we don't have a good lead singer, and he was really coming, you know, not coming after me, but ribbing me.
I hear you.
Yeah, well, or showing his displeasure that I left the group.
Right. No, I hear you. Well, you know, it's funny when you make choices. I mean, you know, because the next thing we're going to talk about is so you're not with the group. And tell me about the song I Rise, I Fall.
I rise, I fall with each little thing you do. You hurt, I hurt, I'm that much a part of you. And when you're happy, baby, well, I'm happy too, since I'm that much a part of you. I fall with each little breath you take. You cry, I cry, 'cause I feel the same heartache. And when you're smiling, baby, I smile too, since I'm that much a part of you.
Right.
And there was a person there by the name of Bud Prager, and he was working with the company to start CSAC, which is a country agency to collect money for country records.
Right.
I'd heard of another space. He knew that I sang, and so he became my manager for a while, and he went over to Coral Records and told them, you know, I was Jay from Jay and the Americans.
Right.
I was, you know, didn't have a contract, you know, they wanted to record me. And so I signed a recording contract with them, and Dick Jacobs from Coral Records.
Right.
And Dick Jacobs was a big producer, did a lot of, I can't say for sure these artists, but these artists were on the label. Teresa Brewer.
Right.
Like that. He was a big producer in that middle 50s era, you know.
Gotcha.
With those kind of acts. And so we, you know, we decided to... did some recording and go in the studio, which we went into a studio up on 57th Street. I forget what which
right.
one it was.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a song at Warner Brothers that I liked called I Rise, I Fall.
Right.
And I believe I wasn't the contact that got Johnny Tillotson to record it.
Right.
But I was working on that song as a song plugger, actually.
Right.
But when I went over there, I brought the song with me, and I liked it, and we ended up recording that. We did a number of songs. I did about two or three singles on that label.
Right. What were some of the other tunes you did with Carl?
There was a song that I wrote. Well, I did a song. The B side of that was a song called "Little Sister."
Right.
I wrote.
Ah.
If you look at the name on there, it will say Scott Weston, but that's me.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
I changed the songwriting name.
Right. That happens all the time. I know.
Little sister, you've captured my heart. Oh, what shall I do? It'll break your big sister's heart. I'm leaving her for you. It's kind of mean, I know. I think she'll understand that I want to be your man, so don't say a word about this. Just give me one more kiss, oh, I love you. Tomorrow will be. It was just 1 month ago. That was when you met me. It seems like such a long time. How can I tell her she's losing her fella? I'll have to tell her how. Tell her just how much, oh, I love you.
So now we're up to about the time where I have a group called the Islanders, and we had done some stuff on Relic Records as an a cappella group, because I had, you know, always had a band in high school. So one of my friends, Tom Giacalone, said, you know, okay, we're singing on the street corner. Let's do this and that. So I don't remember what happened. We were singing on the street corner somewhere. We used to go to Jones Beach and sing and here and there. And all of a sudden, this guy, Gene Moretti, approaches us and says, wow, you guys are great. Why don't you come over to my house in Glen Cove and, you know, show me exactly what you got. And we came over and, you know, we sat in his living room, in his den, actually, and we sang for about an hour and 20 minutes. And he says, okay, that's enough. He says, you guys are great and recordable and all that other stuff, and we're going to go into the studio. And, you know, I was with MGM. I got this new situation called GMC Records, and let's do it. And we said, hey, great, you know, we're going to be stars. So he wants a contract. And, of course, Tommy was a young Italian kid, and his mother kept the contract sitting in, you know, in the house for like 6 weeks, wouldn't sign it, yada, yada. What, my son, you're taking my son away, finally she signs the contract, and one night he calls us up, he says, I want you to come over the house. He said, because coming over the house the same night will be Jay from Jay and the Americans. And we said, we'll be there in 15 minutes, and we were. So you walk in and we talk, you know. I remember that night. It was had to be over 40 years ago.
Yeah, it has to be, because I remember. I wasn't sure what I came over for. Just to meet you guys, or
yeah, I don't know. You know, and you also brought with you some of your original stuff, and I remember, I don't know whether Gino wanted to record you or what the story was, but you handed me a song, and actually there was sheet music to this tune, because I remember having the sheet music in my hand and playing it on the guitar, and I think you gave me a copy of the sheet music, which I had probably for all those years and don't know where it is now, you know, Gino said, would you like to record this tune? And we started, like, working on it, actually. It was really funny, because years and years later, I'm on the Solid Gold Jukebox in Poughkeepsie with Rick McCaffrey and Gary Lee, and you're on the same night. I think you had phoned in it. Or no, what it was, I think I was on with Kenny Vance, and you were on the phone with us.
Yeah, that could be.
Right, and you had phoned it in, and I said to you, do you remember a song called Looking Out My Window? I think you wrote it, and you said, I didn't write that, and I said, yeah, and I said, and so, you know, I leaned into the mic, and I said, what will I see looking out my window, looking out my window, and you sang back, and you said, looking for my love, and I said, and then you said, yeah, I think I did write that song, because otherwise, how would I know? You know,
that's funny. You forget things like that, but I did write that song, and I remember that was when I was working at Warner Brothers. It was
right
in between call and recording for Dennis Lambert.
Right, right.
He is. And I remember I was living in Mineola, and I was writing songs, like on a guitar. I was starting to learn guitar a little bit and yeah, piano a little bit. And I remember writing that song. That song was actually, the influence of that song for me,
right,
was a song that Lieber and Stoller had for Jay and the Americans called I Remember You, which later Jay and the Americans recorded,
uh-huh,
much later in their career.
Wow.
There was something about that, their version, their lyrics, that made me do this thing. And I think,
right,
I might have even used one or two ideas about looking in her eyes, looking at the gray skies.
Right.
Yeah, something like that. And it was they had something that was some of the blue eyes and blue skies.
Right.
Skies, and they had gray skies. I don't know.
Well, you know, what's funny is that song's been kicking around in my head for all these years. You know how some things, like, just get into your head, and every once in a while they just kick around in your head, you know? And the bridge would come into my head, and I would say, is that the bridge from this? How do I remember this? I have no idea how or why I remember this, but it would come out, and then all of a sudden, you know, I would remember, oh yeah, that's the song that Jay Traynor had. You know,
I remember too, a friend of mine at Warner Brothers Music wrote the lead sheet for me, because he was a lead sheet writer.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why I had the lead sheet. And then I think I did a little demo recording with him playing piano, and I maybe play guitar.
Right.
And I did. It's funny. I was just telling you earlier today when we first talked, that I didn't realize I had written so many tunes. I found them just recently. So I found three of them.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, why didn't I record these? Because these were coming from me, and
right,
I found it. I was really surprised at the sound on it, even though they were demos.
Right. I know. I hear you.
But just, you know, it's like Neil Diamond doing his songs. Neil Sedaka doing his songs. You know, you always sound best on your stuff, you know?
Well, you know, it's it becomes part of you.
What will I see looking out my window? Looking out my window, looking for my love. What will I see looking at the blue skies? Maybe it's her blue eyes looking back at me. Oh, when she left.
Let's talk about Clay Cole a little bit. I first met Clay when I had the Islanders way back, and Clay had just taken over a place called Murray the K's World because Murray had lost his liquor license. And they had decided to open up a teenage nightclub, and it was in Roosevelt Field area in an old airplane hangar, and it was Clay Cole's World. And here are my Islanders, and, you know, we had a chance to open up for Johnny Maestro and the Crests when he had Lois Lee in the group, which, you know, Joey D's wife at that time.
Right.
And we did a couple of shows there, and that's when I first met Clay. And he did a lot for us then. And then, of course, Clay was on WPIX, you know, where the Yankees were, and he used to get box seats. And my father had a box at Yankee Stadium, so I go one day, and I turn around, and Clay is sitting right behind me on the first base side, down the first baseline. And I turn around, and it's just Clay Cole, and he says, "Aren't you the guy that sang the last weekend, you know, with that group at the club?" You're like, "You know, how you doing, Mike?" And then all those years later, Barry Newman asked me to sing with him and J.T. Carter. And Barry did a show called The Memories of Gold Thing, and he had Clay in to MC it. And I said, "You know, Clay, you introduced me 43 years ago, and now you're introducing me all those years later." I said, "You know, wow, how great is that?" So we did an interview, and I replayed the interview last week. And Clay called me up. He's such a sweet guy, to thank me. He says, "You know, thank you for replaying the interview and everything else." And then I was in California, and 2 days later I came back, and I see on Facebook, and his brother Rick called me up and said he passed away while he was writing Christmas cards, which was the kind of guy that he was, a sweet, sweet guy.
"Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend Mike Miller."
Oh, yeah, I know. It was just a shock to all of us, and I didn't know that part of it until I got the email from you.
You know?
I heard that someone said there was a coffee pot going on or something, and orange juice.
Yeah.
But then you told me he was writing Christmas cards to people.
What happened was he was writing cards all morning to people, and then he got up, and he never made it from the hallway inside, and his brother told me the way he fell, you could tell that he didn't try to break his fall. He just, you know, that was it. And he had a heart attack.
Sometimes you think that's a better way to go than a lot of people, you know. It's so much simpler, but it's awful that he passed away, you know.
And, you know, I mean, you know, I read his book, and there's so much stuff in that book, I'm saying to myself. And he dated some big actresses, and he really did a lot of big things. You know, he had a bunch of movies. He was the first one to have the Rolling Stones on TV. I mean, you know, broke the color line, really. He was the first one to break the color line even before some of the Philly.
I remember the show with the Rolling Stones. I was watching it.
Wow.
I remember that show. You know?
Unbelievable. He told me a story. He said, you know, two stories that I remember. He said he's at a party, a music party, and it was a pool party, and Dion goes up to the top diving board and does a perfect swan dive off the top diving board, and nobody could figure out how a guy from the Bronx could learn how to do a swan dive. Like, where did he learn that? And the other thing was, he says the first group that he met when he came to New York was the Mystics, you know, And they took him out and they showed him out in the town, he said, and they showed him New York and whatever, and they got him drunk. And he said, that was the first group that I met. He said, and they corrupted me right away.
That was my connection to him.
Wow.
Through the Mystics.
Wow.
And doing shows and that. And somehow, I don't remember how this came about, but Clay decided to do a recording, and the title of the song was called Here, There, and Everywhere.
Oh, I remember it well, yeah.
I remember being in the studio doing background work for him and Teddy Van, who produced the record. And I think Lou Rotundo was, he told me that he was there.
Yeah, Louis from the Passions.
Yeah, Lou Rotundo. And a lot of it I can't remember, but I remember doing the recording with him. And,
wow.
You know, we were friends to the Mystics. And like I said, the Mystic show with Clay was the beginning of Jane the Americans.
Wow.
And all that connects. But I know he had so many people on his show and so many things he did and did a movie. And, you know, he does not get the recognition that he should compared to, you know, Dick Clark or Alan Freed.
I know.
I mean, at that time, New York was the music business, you know?
You're
that was,
right.
That and L.A., a little bit of L.A. and a touch of, you know, and Nashville, Memphis. But that was the music business.
No, I know.
And he was, you know, he had everybody in the world on that show. I've even read that, and I don't remember this, but he had the Rolling Stones on, but someone said he also had the Beatles on the same show.
Yeah.
Both on the same show, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, Clay was very big, and he was a good looking guy, and that show rolled and everything. And here's the crime, you know what he told me? He actually told me that PIX was not a big budget station. When he left the show and his show ended, they recorded over all of that tape.
Man. I know what you're saying.
And reused it instead of saving it and archiving it. And there's hardly anything left of the Clay Cole shows with all that talent that could be brought up now and shown to people, you know, whatever. It was all recorded over.
Well, it's so funny because none of us ever thought, I mean, I never thought you'd get royalties like 40 years later. Well, they did the same thing with the, you know, recording tape and television tape. They just, you know, reuse it again. We need another reel. Well, no, don't buy a reel. Use that one, you know?
Yeah, it's over and done with. We'll just record over it. I mean, that's... And now, you know, we're nostalgia crazy now in this world, you know?
Sure. We keep... Because it's so easy to keep on digital format, you know?
Oh, yeah, you know, and that's another thing about Clay Cole. He was one of the few guys that actually danced with the kids, and he could really dance.
Oh, yeah, he really could dance. And he had the Capris and the Angels, or the Delicates, so his background dancers and singers,
oh, yeah.
You know? He had a lot of things that he did with, you know, Peggy and
oh, yeah.
Diggs and Denise Ferrari and a lot of...
Oh, yeah, and he also had the Del Santins on a lot, and they could really dance, you know?
I just said Bernadette Peters. I meant to say Bernadette Carroll, I think it is.
Right, Bernadette Carroll.
Yeah.
Right.
But he did a lot of things with them, you know, and brought them to shows besides singing songs and hit records and stuff. You know, they would be his background dancers, singers, etc.
Right.
He was quite a guy, you know.
Absolutely. And the sweetest guy, and didn't have an ego, you know. He wanted you to be noticed.
Right. I did a show with him when he first started to come back a little bit.
Right.
I know he didn't want to do too much because he felt it wasn't good for his health, you know.
Right.
He felt tired and a lot from...
Right.
Because we're all trying to get him back to introduce shows and do an internet radio show and
right.
do everything, you know, and get back on the scene. And I did a show in New Jersey with him, and out of nowhere, he hands me a autographed copy, especially to me, of his book, Shaboom, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was knocked out by it. And
yeah, I know. He sent me one, and I really treasure it. I have it on a little pillow.
I was just thinking, you know what it costs to give out? I mean, he gave books out to everybody.
I know. But he was just a sweet guy. But I'm really glad because, you know, he disappeared for a long time, and everybody would say, you know, what happened to Clay Cole? I don't know. He's, you know, he just kind of, like, faded out. I'm really glad he got a chance to... Get back and do what he did best and write the book, because now that the book is there, it'll live forever. And who knows, you know, maybe there's a movie there, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, if you, talking about a movie with Dennis Levitt. I think there's a great movie there with Clay Cole.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's got everything you would want in there, entertainment, mafia. But
and not only that, those stories, there were so many different stories to call on. And, you know, the other thing about that book, you know, to give Clay credit, he wrote every word of that book. He's told me his mother proofread it. He wrote every word himself. He did not have anybody help him with that book. And it's written so beautifully.
That's
when you read it.
The book, because it's from him and his heart.
Yeah.
He just wrote what he remembered. You know, nothing was made up I am also glad, too, that he had that last couple of years to do some shows, get back in front of the people, especially like in the Netherlands there with the Deborah Nady show.
Right.
To get the book out there, to get his memoirs out there, you know, and just meet all the people again and meet all his friends and,
right.
And you know, before this happened.
So I remember way back years ago when we were all on Rick McCaffrey and Gary Lee Schwartz's show, and you know, Gary Lee, who's pretty zany, you know, as we all know, you know, he actually asked you, you know, what your relationship was with Jay Black, and we talked about it a little bit. Do you wish to go there at all, or should we leave that just?
No, that's fine. That's fine because it was what it was then. And time has changed that, which is
right.
Really an interesting story.
Oh, great! Then let's talk about it.
Well, back then, of course, I felt I was Jay, and that you know, he had taken my name, or
right.
Whatever. And I never understood until even Jay Segal said to me, he said, the record company is not going to change the name.
Right.
I always said I would have loved it if they called the name of the group after I left Dave and the Americans.
Right.
It would have made my life much easier.
Right.
It really made my life hard because I would say, oh, yes, I was the original lead singer, Jay from Jay and the Americans. And people would say, no, you're not. No, you know, Jay Black is, you know.
Right.
And so on and so forth. So in a way, I would build up a resentment. And sometimes Jay would sing She Cried at shows with me and all that. And then I started going, then about 20 years later in the middle 80s, I started going out on the doo-wop circuit.
Right.
As Jay Traynor in the Americans.
Right.
And then he sued me because of that we're in law, you know, and all that kind of stuff. We start hating each other. Because
yeah, well, we all know about all of that stuff that went down with, you know, your name, my name, his name, their name. I mean, you know, I even sang with Dave Rick's version of Vita and the Salutations. You know, why? Because I did it because, you know, I like to sing. But, you know how that works. So
the funny thing is, actually, this lawsuit came about not because of either one of us, because of a promoter. Hired me for a show in Port Chester, New York.
Right.
And he was advertising it on, what's the big station in New York City? I can't think right now.
CBS?
What's that?
Was it CBS FM or one of those?
CBS FM. He was advertising a show on CBS FM. But he had the song Caramia playing.
I see.
Not my song.
That's a faux pas.
After that happened, I realized that if I was Jay Black, I would have been mad at me.
Right.
But it wasn't me. I didn't even know what was being advertised. I was living up in Albany, New York. How would
right.
I hear that?
Right.
So it was really a promoter's greed to use Jay Black and have me in the middle of the whole thing.
Gotcha.
It must have prevailed. And, you know, the lawyers just make everybody angry.
No, you're not. Well, the lawyers are the ones that make all the money. I mean, you know, look, let's look out over the horizon. There are two Mystics groups. There are two Randy and the Rainbows groups. There's 10 Platters groups. There are two Tokens groups. I mean, you know, so, you know, and what's funny is there's probably enough room in the world for everybody to sing and sing well.
It's funny. We had a lawsuit there, and I finally settled with Jay because for everybody, I mean, paying lawyers is just ridiculous.
No, I agree.
And it shows off in the recent lawsuit with the two Tobin's groups, and that settled. But the losers are the people who are suing because you spend so much money on lawyers, and
right,
the lawyers just drag it out, and every minute
you know.
Do whatever. But we settle it, and then in recent years, I've been singing with Jay Segal and the Tokens.
Right.
And we never really did a show with Jay Black, but one and Jay is friendly with Jay Black.
Right.
Segal is.
And
Jay Black's friend, this girl Sandy.
I know Sandy.
Said to Jay, would you think Jay Traynor would come to his 70th birthday party? Would you, you know, ask him and invite him? And at that point in my life, I was like, you know, just bury the hatchet. You know, it's too late in life to be angry with anybody. And I said, yeah, I'd love
right.
him. And I went to his 70th birthday party, and it was a great party. He, you know, he didn't know I was going to be there. It was strange when he walked in.
Right.
But he took it great, and then he had me sing She Cried
wow.
at his birthday party.
Wow, that's great.
And so, and then we did some shows together, and we did a PBS show that hasn't come out yet together back.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I did my song, She Cried, and I said, now please, you know, I hope everyone stays tuned because I want you to listen to the next artist. It's my son, Jay Black.
That's funny.
And so we've become friends, you know. And
yeah, that's great.
Just got to bury the hatchet sooner or later.
Oh,
you know,
of course.
And so we're friends. In fact, I remember the night that Johnny Maestro passed away.
Right.
Jay called me like a minute after he found out.
Right.
I'm not sure if he found out, but he called me. He was crying. I mean, it was.
Oh yeah.
But he felt something about calling me. You know, so therefore there was a friendship.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, you know, the Tolkiens work a lot. I mean, you know, you guys are just working and working. I mean, I spoke to. There was one time we were sitting with Billy's wife. It was one of Barry's shows up at the Kravis Center, and Billy's wife said, "I never see him. He's always singing, you know."
Oh yeah, yeah. We're lucky with that. We're still working a lot. Hopefully this year will be a good year. You know.
Oh yeah.
I always hope that our audiences will still be there because we work for the baby boomers now, and
yeah, I know.
You know, we lose them too, just like the artists. You know, so we just.
I know what you're saying. Let's talk about the one thing we didn't touch on that most people would be interested in is that you know, all the time that you were doing other things, you weren't just hanging out. You were up in Albany, and you were doing big band, and let me tell you, man, I've got a whole collection of it that you sent me, and, you know, a lot of this stuff is live stuff with a big band orchestra, and it's great stuff. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like Simply Sinatra. I mean, it's wonderful. So how did you get started with that?
Thank you. Well, when I was in Albany, I did a lot of different types of singing. I was with a cover band. I did R&B and
right.
jazz, trios. And one night on the radio, I heard this big band, and I called up the big band leader, and I said, would you be interested in a, you know, a lead singer? You
right.
know? They had one, but, you know, he was also, actually, this guy was also working with another actual old-time big band, so
right.
he wasn't always there.
Right.
And they said yes. So I started working with them, and I mean, I did many, many different big band tunes from Glenn Miller, etc. And I kind of liked it. I really enjoyed.
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, I listened to one after another, and Paulette sat and listened with me. You know, I listened to every tune that you sent me, and one's better than the next. It's great.
Well, yeah, and those recordings that I sent, that, you know, that you have there,
right?
They're all just. On the cuff, two-track, you know,
right.
not really mixed super well or whatever. Just out of, I actually got a radio show on the PBS station in Albany, WAMC.
Right.
And I knew the head man there, and he allowed us to do a Wednesday night live big band show for two
wow.
hours.
Wow.
So a lot of those recordings are from that. And actually, an agent up in the Utica, but he said, "Why don't you guys do a Sinatra, you know, a Sinatra show?" It wasn't considered a tribute show. It was a Sinatra show,
right?
Where we tried to reproduce the feeling and sound of Sinatra in Vegas,
right?
And so that's when I started doing all these Sinatra tunes, and in this big band, I did Bobby Darin and stuff too, you know, Mac the Knife and
right.
Clementine and you know, other songs, and. The Sinatra thing really got me. And it was funny, years before that, I was not a fan of Sinatra. I didn't know that much about him.
Right.
Once this started to hit me and I started listening, I realized what a phenomenal, one of the best singers in the world, the phrasing.
Oh, phrasing, forget about it. You know, my vocal coach always used to say to me, if you want to get your phrasing better, just buy some Sinatra records.
Just listen to what he does. And when you think you've got it, he does it differently. You know, it's
And the other thing that he does that's great is he finishes every word. He puts all the T's on the end of a word. He puts, well, he pronounces the D at the end of could. And sometimes it's not could, but all of the consonants are there. And a lot of singers don't do that because they're sloppy.
Right. He articulated every song. Well, he had wonderful songs. He had songs that had verses that lead into the song, which is something you don't hear of anymore.
Right.
You know, these big, long verses, that, and then all of a sudden the song starts. And I remember doing these shows. I did a two-hour Sinatra show. That's what we would do, a two-hour show.
Right.
And I must have had millions of lyrics. I had a golden lyrics all the
time. Wow, that's, you know, you don't realize it. You know, there are an awful lot of lyrics when you're doing standards.
Oh, unbelievable.
A lot of guys use a book up there. You know, they got a stand with a book.
I didn't go that far. I had a stand to just remind me what the next tune is.
Right, right.
But I would rehearse these songs, for, you know, like going to the show. I was in the car going to the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just sing along with them, and I go, oh, I get that word wrong. You know, and I'd work on that. And then after a while, it became, you know, second nature. And even now, I haven't done that in 5 or 6 years. Most of the songs, I could sing 80% of the lyrics, you know, most of them. I'd have to.
What are some of your favorite standards that you think you like to do?
Well, some of my favorites of Sinatra that I enjoy singing, first of all, The Wee Small Hours of the Morning, that's right. One of my favorites.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl, and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most. Learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you
my tears out to dry.
Right.
That to me is the, you know, quintessential Sinatra song going.
Right.
The torch I carry is handsome. It's worth its heartache in ransom, and when the twilight steals, I know how the lady in the harbor feels. about rain. I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love is gone, can't pull myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Friends ask me out, I tell them I'm busy. I must get a new alibi. I stay at home and ask myself, who is he? Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Dry little teardrops, my little teardrops, hanging on a string of dreams. Fly little memories, my little memories, remind her of our crazy scheme. Somebody said, just forget about her. So I gave that treatment a try. Strangely enough, I got along without her. Then one day she passed me right by. Oh, well, I guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
I love Fly Me to the Moon. When we did the show, I used to do My Way, but I never sang it my way. I always used to sing it his way. it was really a tribute to him.
And now the end is near, and so I face final curtain. My friend, I say it clear, I stayed my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway and more. More than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved, I've laughed and cried, I've had my fill, my share of losing. And now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing. To think I did all that, and I may say, not in a shy way, oh no, no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows and did it my way.
Okay.
One time I recorded my as a song My Way, but every time we did the show, I did it as His Way. I love doing that song. We did every song that everyone ever had heard of Sinatra, but we did a lot of things. We did a song called All I Need Is a Girl. It was a great song that he did, not with Count Basie, but Duke Ellington.
vest, all I need now is a girl. Got my stripe tie, I got my hopes way up high. I got the time and the place and the rhythm. All I need's the girl to go with him. Just a pill will take this big town for a whirl. And if she'll say, my darling, I'm yours, I'll throw away my strap tie and my best tweed. All I really need is the girl.
Well, you know, I used to do a tune by him that you don't hear much. It's You Will Be My Music. Do you do that one?
I love that song. I have the chart for it, but I've never had a chance to do it.
I've heard it up-tempo, and I've also heard it done a little bit slower. That's a great tune. I think that's a Joe Raposo tune.
It is. You Will Be My Music.
Right. It's a very different kind of a song for him, you know.
That comes from the album that he did in L.A., which is a wonderful recording.
Right.
Wonderful album. I think Don Costa did all this
Ripping
on it.
Oh, yeah.
And he did a song in that concert that I put on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And I have to bring the title again. I can't think of it now.
Uh-huh.
You have it. I put it on that disc there.
Okay.
I'll think of it in a second. But that's another great tune on that album. It's a good album, you know. He also did. He did a show at Madison Square Garden called The Main Event with Woody Herman.
Right.
And he did Bad Bad Leroy Brown.
Oh yeah, Leroy.
You would think Sinatra doing Bad Bad Leroy Brown, it's got to be kind of corny, right?
Right.
Well, the arrangement is a killer.
Uh-huh.
And he does a nice job with it. But the arrangement is such a killer that I love it, you know?
Right.
I actually did it in the show one time. And it's just a wonderful. It's great, great thing. I wasn't crazy about some of the later stuff. And duets, I wasn't.
Nah, I hear you.
I like the thing with Aretha Franklin, What Now My Love. That
right, right.
But I knew how they put it together, you know, it's like Telephone.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, it's every singer's dream to sing, you know, in front of a big band, you know, if you got the chops. I mean, and, you know, I've done some 40 stuff. One of the 40 tunes that I recorded, and I'll send it to you, is the Billy Eckstine tune, You've Changed. That's a great song.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to send it to you. And there's some others that I really like. Now I'm having a brain thing. I'll Be Seeing You is a wonderful
great
tune.
Song.
You know.
Yep.
You know, there were just some tunes that, you know, it's like the lyrics are so good and the melodies are so good that it's like great. So let me ask you something. Do you have any regrets in the music business? Do you have any regrets about having left Jay and the Americans, or in your head have you gotten past that?
I think at this point I've gotten past that. You know, you always wonder, would I have been bigger if I had stayed with the group?
Right.
But one thing I realized is that I would have never sung Caramia.
Right, okay.
So maybe that was something that really made the group bigger. Uh, and, and some of the songs that maybe they did with Jay, I wouldn't have been doing. You know, it wouldn't be my style. So I have to write it off that way.
Yeah.
You know, you always feel a little jealous or a little whatever.
Well,
you know,
the consolation is here we are full circle, and there's a new Jay.
Right.
And, you know, he comes out very humbly. As a matter of fact, on the bandstand, they call him Three. They say, come here, Three.
Right.
You know, and he plays it off very well. And he just says, listen, I realize you've heard all these songs before. He said, you know, and I've had a great opportunity to be, you know, with these great bunch of guys. And I'm going to come out and I'm just going to do my thing. And if you like it, please applaud, you know, and I'm just going to do the best I can. And he does it. And he comes off humble. He doesn't grab the mic and try to be Jay. He just goes out there and tries to be him. And it works.
Yeah, he was a very nice guy. I know that.
Yeah, Jay Ranky. He's a sweet kid. He's a kid, you know.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it works. And I'm glad, actually, that those guys are back doing what they do, because they probably should be singing. I mean, you know, it's, you know, once it's in your blood, it's in your blood.
I know at the time when it first happened, because we had sung together at the Volk Group Hall of Fame, I know Sandy thought I was going to come back with them.
Right.
He was, like, totally sure of it, but I had just gone with the Tokens, and I was very happy with the Tokens.
No, I know.
There was another time I kind of turned them down.
No, I know. And you know what? That would have worked as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and listen, as it worked out, I mean, everybody's doing that thing. I mean, you know, Jay Black is still doing his thing, and Jay Traynor is doing his thing, and Jay Ranky and all of the Americans doing their thing. And Kenny Vance is doing his thing. So
Kenny and I are still really good friends, you know. In fact, I would love to do something with him. I had a thought in my head, and I should call him about it. I would love to do a duets album with him.
Well,
let's do like four, or even an EP.
Yeah,
four great, duets.
That'd be great.
The Everly Brothers and the Righteous Brothers, and Jerry Butler and Let It Be Me, and something like that. You know?
Yeah, Kenny. Well, Kenny likes duets. I did a duet with him on Gary Lee Schwartz's show that night. As a matter of fact, I played guitar and whatever. Kenny wanted to go in the other room and rehearse it for 20 minutes. I said, Kenny, we're just going to do it. He says, no, it's got to be perfect. I said, okay.
I just saw Kenny at a show, so, you know, we can't believe we're still, like, we get on a show, and there I am on stage, he's on stage, we can't believe it after all these years.
Oh, yeah, you know, Kenny's a sweet, sweet guy, you know. So, Jay, what would you like to say to people that are Jay Traynor fans? I mean, if you could put them all in one room and just, like, say something to them, you know, people that have been listening to you over the years and know that you're the original Jay and have followed you all these years. If you had one thing that you wanted to say to them, what would you like to say to them?
Well, those people that know the difference of, you know, the first Jay and so on and so forth, I would really like to thank them for always remembering me and remembering the beginning of the group, you know, and who I was. And a lot of those people liked my sound. So, all I can tell them is that I love singing, and the thing for me is to sing from the heart. And the singing is the most important thing to me, not the ego, not the stage thing. It's just, I just want to sing. I think they see that in me, and I really appreciate their being loyal all these years.
Well,
I love it. I mean, I love it when someone comes up and he goes, "Oh, I know you're the original. That's the one I like the best." You know?
Right,
That makes me feel great.
Well, I'm certainly a Jay Traynor fan, and I have been all these years. And you're also a terrific guy. And I know that I know something about you that other people don't know. You love to stay in shape, and you love to stay healthy, and you know, you love to be pure, and you love the good life. So, you know, that's a good thing, too.
Yep. Yeah, you have to, you know, especially this day and age, you gotta kind of stay in shape so you can get around with the traveling we do, you know.
Well,
as far as the business is the traveling, I love being on stage and all that, but the The one thing we always say, well, they don't pay us to sing on stage. We love that. They pay us to get there.
No, I understand that totally. And actually, Paulette and I will probably see you at the Broward Center. There's another big NADA show coming up on March 6th, and that's going to be Anthony and the Imperials and our friend Kenny Vance and the Planetones, and Tommy Mara is going to sing a few tunes. And, of course, Jay Siegel and the Tokens, and you'll be there. And that's going to be actually March 6th. So anybody that's listening in the Florida area and they want to see a really great show, come to another wonderful Richard Nader Productions, and, of course, run by the fabulous Deborah Nader. And that'll be March 6th. And we'll all be there. I'll be there. Paulette will be there. And you will be there.
Yes, I'll be there. And I hope many people come to the Broward Center on March 6th. It's going to be a great show.
And, oh, yeah.
You shouldn't miss great groups like that.
Well, and it always sells out. I mean, you know, they always sell out the Broward, you know, and it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and it'd be fun for me to see you again, Mike and Paulette. And,
oh, absolutely.
Enjoy the show, as always, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's really, really been great talking to you. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's been the original Jay from Jay and the Americans, Jay Trainer on the Harmony Street Show, and I'm going to tell you this. Love you, man. I mean, you know, you're as creative as hell, and you've been a friend of mine, you know, since for most of my adult life, and it's just really been great. Just keep up the good work. Just keep singing, man. It's been great.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, and the Harmony Street Show. I'm really, I'm glad to do this interview and find out a little bit more about me for people, and see you and Paulette and everybody at the show on March 6th. All right, Mike. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Bye-bye, man.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for being a guest on the Harmony Street Show. Now let's take it out with Jay Trainer and the Joey Thomas Big Band Orchestra. Here's Jay Trainer live.
My story is much too sad to be told, but practically everything leaves me totally cold. The only exception I know is a case when I'm out on a quiet spree, fighting vainly the old ennui. Then I suddenly turn and see your fabulous face. I get no kick from champagne. Pure alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick out of you? Come fly with me, we'll fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on, fly with me, we'll fly away. Come fly with me, we'll float down to Peru. In Lama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come on, fly with me, we'll float down in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air's rarefied, we'll just glide, starry-eyed. They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me, the pickings have been lush,
And yet, before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners. You might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see just how nice of a dame you can be. I know the way you treated other guys you've been. Is it an earthquake? Simply a shock. Is it the good turtle soup or meal in a mop? Is it a cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel the real McCoy? Is it for all time simply a lock? Is it Granada I see, or only Asbury Park? Is it a fancy not worth thinking of? Or is it our long last love? Is it an earthquake or simply a shock? Is it that good turtle soup merely the mock? Is it a cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel the McCoy? Is it for all the time simply a lark? Is it Granada I see, or only Asbury Park? Is it a fancy not worth thinking of? Or is it our long last love?
Remember the love we found on high.